KUT.ca. Oh,
yeah! I want to be your motivator.
Intended for all Quebecers. We must take extreme measures to curb the pandemic. Only essential services remain open. Gatherings are prohibited. It's forbidden to leave your home between 8 p.m. and 5 a.m. These efforts aim to protect our healthcare workers, seniors, and loved ones. Let's comply with the lockdown and curfew to lower the risk of contracting COVID-19, because our health is important. For more information, visit quebec.ca/confinement. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
And welcome to Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. This is your host, Ryan Young. Welcome to the show. So, because of the very alarming and very, some would say, premature curfew here in Quebec, so now between 8 p.m. and 5 a.m., it is not legal for people to be out and about doing whatever they like to do. You can only be circulating if you are an essential worker, going to and from work, and there are a few other exceptions, walking a dog within a 1 kilometer radius of your house and so on. So here on Equilibrium, we thought, even though we are mainly a show about environmental issues and we focus on environmental topics, we still thought that it was important to cover such a major development in the fight against COVID-19 that is very repressive and restrictive and has an effect on civil society, has an effect on people who work on social justice issues, and perhaps also on the work of people that do environmental activism. There also has not been a whole lot of coverage of this issue in the mainstream media. I'm sure there's been some radio talk show call-ins and so on and so forth, but in terms of the newspaper media, we're not seeing a whole lot of critical viewpoints about the curfew. So we are devoting our show today to some critical viewpoints when it comes to the curfew. So when I started to research songs that might be about curfews, the very first song I came across was the 1960s tune For What It's Worth. And For What It's Worth was written by Stephen Stills, and it was performed with Buffalo Springfield, which was that band that Neil Young was also in. And it was actually, many people always think that that song, For What It's Worth, was actually an anti-war song, but it actually came out of the Sunset Strip curfew riots in November of 1966. So there was, I guess, a whole counterculture thing going on the Sunset Strip in Hollywood, California, beginning in mid-1966, and local residents and businesses had become annoyed by how the crowds of young people were going to clubs and music venues along the strip, and they caused a lot of late-night traffic congestion. So in response, they lobbied the city to pass ordinances stopping loitering and enforcing a strict curfew on the strip after 10 p.m. And of course, the young people that were occupying the Sunset Strip at night felt the new laws infringed upon their civil rights. And I guess this is what led Stephen Stills to write this song, For What It's Worth. And we're not going to play the Buffalo Springfield version, which is the most famous version, and I'm sure you've heard it before. Instead, we're going to play the version by the Staple Singers, which they came out with in 1967. So here is For What It's Worth by the Staple Singers.
Something happened in here, but it feels ain't exactly clear. Everybody look what's going down.
And that was the tune For What It's Worth by the Staples Singers. It's actually a song that does refer to a curfew. And there are very few songs out there that talk about curfews. I did find some, but that was the one I chose for today's show. So as I said, we're going to be discussing the Quebec curfew. And our first interview is with Jaggy Singh. Jaggy Singh, actually, who has been a regular contributor to CKUT 90.3 FM and a longtime political activist. And actually, Jaggy, on January 8th, wrote an opinion piece that was published in Cult MTL, or Cult Montreal, which is basically the arts and culture weekly that sort of replaced The Mirror when The Mirror went out of business. But Jaggy's opinion piece was entitled The Quebec Curfew is Authoritarian Theater. So I caught up with Jaggy on Sunday, January 10th, to discuss his opposition to the curfew. So here is that interview now. This is Ryan Young for Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM, and I'm here with Jaggy Singh, longtime political activist, writer, and community organizer and producer of No Borders Media. So we are here to talk about this very important development in the way the Quebec government is dealing with COVID-19, and that is the putting in place of a curfew where people are not allowed to circulate in the street between 8 p.m. and 5 a.m. So Jaggy, tell me why for you this curfew is problematic.
Well, I think as a preamble, it's important to sort of situate myself vis-a-vis the pandemic and measures against the pandemic, because unfortunately, there has been a vocal group of people on the right, rooted in conspiracy theories, who have denounced any sort of health measures during this pandemic. And I reject that. I believe that the pandemic health measures, the consensus pandemic health measures, such as shutting down, such as masking in indoor locations, practicing social distancing, the fact that we can't go to concerts or bars or any other large spaces where people gather. I think those are sound public health measures that are important to our collective health, to make sure that hospitals aren't overrun, to make sure that vulnerable in society are protected. I believe in that communal public health. That makes a lot of sense. So that's a starting point for me. But the curfew doesn't serve a public health purpose. It's authoritarian theater. The Legault government has not provided clear public health justification for this curfew. It's rather meant to create fear. And actually, I think it will go against some of the efforts that we want to make in terms of collective public health. For example, you have to try to build societal trust. You're not going to have people who are going to, for example, agree to contact tracing and provide details of where they've been if they feel like they're going to get ticketed or they feel like they're going to be criminalized. Moreover, we know some of the key measures that have to take place to mitigate and to eventually end this pandemic. One thing about this pandemic is that we can make comparisons to other countries and other jurisdictions, because this is a global pandemic. So we know that resources and funding to key sectors like health and education are crucial. You can't expect kids, for example, to do at-home learning if they don't have a computer or a tablet or not even internet. So that has to be provided for. We need to provide pay increases for people working in the educational and health sector. There's clear evidence that the COVID-19 virus is spread through aerosol spray. So we need to improve ventilation in schools and workplaces. We know that one of the drivers of the pandemic is in workplaces, large workplaces. So that needs to be targeted. Now, the curfew is saying to people that you can't be out except for very limited reasons after 8 p.m. And not only that, there's a sort of a reverse burden. If you are out after 8 p.m., even using one of the reasons that you can be out, that you're an essential worker, et cetera, it's up to you to prove that. It's up to you to prove that you're within 1 kilometer of your house if you're walking your dog, or it's up to you to prove that you're on your way to work if you're on the bus or what have you. That creates a huge room for abuse by the police. Just to give one clear example, we know that in essential work and essential services, a lot of the people doing that work are undocumented workers, because that's the only kind of jobs that they can get. So an undocumented worker is going to be out after 8 p.m. on their way to work or back from work, and they're going to be able to be targeted by the police, which means the potential that they can be detained and deported because they're undocumented. Those are the kind of abuses that we might see. And I mean, I'm giving you a long answer to just one question. I can say a lot more, but there's a lot to be said about how the Legault government's response has focused on policing, snitching, and authoritarianism, as opposed to promoting social solidarity. What the curfew, along with ticketing and along with other measures that center the police, do is have society blame each other. Like, we're blaming other neighbors. We're trying to project onto others who's responsible for potential pandemic spread. You have these ludicrous situations where people are snitching on neighbors because they have an extra friend over or what have you. I'm not talking about the flagrant abuses of pandemic health measures, you know, such as large gatherings that are unmasked indoors. I'm talking about the fact that we know that everybody's have decided on their own bubble, and that might not mean their exact household. And, you know, that idea of having one household is very heteronormative, right? People have all kinds of lifestyles and don't necessarily live together, but are very close and support each other. So we've created a situation where we sort of have this snitch culture, what we say in French, a culture de délation. And we're punching down. We're blaming each other instead of punching up and looking, as the league points out, at the structural reasons for pandemic spread and the structural things we can do to change that. And so the curfew will perpetuate that, because fear, unfortunately, is a major factor in determining people's behavior. And I think what the pandemic is what the curfew is meant to do is create fear. It has no real public health purpose. But I'm also, you know, as you mentioned in the intro, I'm a community organizer. We just don't sit back as governments do this. We need to think of strategic and tactical ways to respond. But I think a lot of us are getting fed up at seeing with suspicion fellow neighbors and always judging other people. That kind of condescending, guilt-ridden, shame-ridden way of having a society is not the kind of society that we want to live in. But that's what curfews do. And again, it becomes about individual behaviors instead of the structural, collective ways that we can change this. I also want to point out that, you know, when we talk about those structural reasons, keep in mind that in Quebec specifically, although this is a phenomenon throughout the world, but in Quebec specifically, there's been significant gross underfunding of the healthcare sector for generations by successive Quebec governments, whether they're CAQ, Liberal, or PQ. That's a structural reason why we have a problem. And we know now, you know, what this crisis shows is that we could spend and make the overarching decisions to actually provide proper funding to make sure that we can meet the needs that this pandemic has forced on us.
You know, there are so many immigrants with medical credentials that the Quebec government refuses to recognize their credentials and hire them. You know, they force them to go through the Quebec version of whatever it is, becoming a nurse or a doctor. Do you think that's an issue as well?
Absolutely. And it reminds me of the following point, right? Like, one positive thing that this pandemic has done is force society to reckon with the fact that we need to deal with facts and science, right? We can't be basing things on people's subjective opinions all the time or conspiracies or what have you. But it's really hard to take seriously a government, that is the Legault government, that in the face of the facts continues to deny systemic racism, right? Like, that's just factually true statement. It's not a controversial statement to say. It's not even a judgment of Quebecois, because systemic racism is something that exists throughout North America. It's kind of hard to take seriously the Legault government that passed Law 21 that says that somehow a woman that wears a hijab or a man that wears a turban or a kippah is not fit to work as a teacher or in other public service jobs. And like you just said, it's kind of hard to take serious a government that doesn't provide for the fact that there are tons of people right now who are doing home deliveries of food or working as cab drivers who could be working as nurses and as doctors and as other professionals because they have the qualifications or they could easily get it without having to repeat medical school. Not to mention that the same Legault government has denied status to the so-called ange gardien, the guardian angels, who the government called upon to fill the long care, the long-term care homes, because they lacked people working there. That was a huge crisis. It was horrible. I mean, we can just recall the Heron, CHSLD, and other places where, you know, I just hate repeating it. It makes me want to cry to think about the conditions in which elders were living and dying in the early stages of the pandemic. But you had people, a lot of them refugees or migrant workers that met the call. And there's other kinds of essential work as well, because I'm very critical of the idea of there being like deserving migrants and undeserving migrants. The fact is, providing status to non-status migrants would allow society to have more social solidarity, and a lot of those folks would be able to help in this pandemic. So all of those things go contrary to the facts. So it's one thing, you know, it's kind of rich to hear Legault talk about how we need to be believing the science, when A, he won't provide the reports and the actual scientific studies that show that the curfew might work and what kind of debate there was internally. And secondly, that he's implementing all these kinds of policies that I just mentioned: denial, systemic racism, refusal to provide status to non-status folks, not providing credentials to people who migrated here who have those credentials from their countries. So that's a huge other part of this dynamic right now.
And the homeless, when we tell the homeless that they can't be out after 8 p.m., that's obviously problematic. And he made this comment that there are beds for them, which, again, seems to be not true from my understanding.
The press conference that Legault gave on Wednesday, and then I believe it was the press conference by Genevieve Guilbeault on Thursday, were pathetic, because on the homeless question, Legault was just oblivious to that reality. For example, there's a serious COVID outbreak right now in shelters in Montreal, in homeless shelters. So we're saying to homeless folks who might find a way, and we all know that homeless folks are extraordinarily resilient people. We need to provide services and support and understanding as a society, but there's a lot of resilience. So people find ways to survive, particularly when winter days are particularly milder than usual, which they have been in the last few days. But we're telling people, go into a shelter, some of which don't have beds, where there's a COVID outbreak. That's absurd. The other absurd thing was when Genevieve Guilbeault, the Minister of Public Security, who, just as a reminder, urged Quebecers to be docile and obedient back in April during one of her press conferences. She had to retract it a few days later, but it does reveal a certain attitude of the government when they are encouraging docility and obedience, which are actually two things that we should never encourage in anyone. In any case, Genevieve Guilbeault was asked a really good question in English by a reporter about racial and social profiling. She was focusing, she even thanked the police, she was focusing on the curfew being implemented by the police, and she was asked a solid question about, there's racial and social profiling, so what do you have to say about that? That Black folks, Indigenous folks, other people of color, homeless people, poor people are consistently and structurally racially profiled every single day. I'm adding words to what the question was, of course. And Guilbeault, all they could answer was to say everyone's supposed to be treated equally in society. Just completely oblivious to that reality, that we know it's only been one day of the curfew, but we know this happens daily and most often happens invisibly. That is, nobody really knows about it, because the people who are the victims of this are often don't have the power or too ashamed to confront that reality, or too scared to confront that reality. So the situation around homeless, undocumented folks, other people who are marginalized, and, you know, just let's be very practical here. The ability to leave your house spontaneously after 8 p.m. is really important. It's a part of mental health. I'm not talking about supposedly mundane things like, you know, going for a walk or exercise, which actually aren't all that mundane. They're pretty important. I'm talking about people who are in households where they just need to get away, where there's the potential of violence, where getting away, even when there's not the potential of immediate violence, where getting away is a way to sort of calm a situation. We know that poor folks and a lot of migrant folks live in substandard housing that is often overpopulated, like a lot of people in one small apartment. And none of that getting away and going outside is actually against health guidelines. When you're doing so alone, or when you're doing so socially distanced and masked, it's just absurd. A point that I made in one of my articles was that, the virus doesn't act differently at night. It's not as if at night the virus becomes stronger and attacks people. So, again, there is a debate amongst health professionals around curfews or not, but generally the people who are proponents of it are saying it creates societal fear and they like that. And we have to realize that medical decisions are debated, and these kinds of decisions are inherently political. And they usually cut along two lines: those that privilege deference to authority, that privilege, seeking out people to blame. And right now the blame is the entirety of society for supposedly not being able to take the pandemic seriously, versus those medical people and public health professionals that say, provide people with information, provide them with resources. And when I say information, I mean information provided creatively and in a targeted fashion. You can't reach, a middle-class white Quebecer who lives in the regions in the same way that you're going to reach migrant populations in Montreal. You're going to talk about different languages. You can't reach, for example, people who are over 50 the same way that you're going to reach people in their 20s. We need to have creative public education. It's basically the difference between those who want to punch down and sort of blame the rest of society versus those who want to punch up and make those structural changes that are necessary for actually mitigating the pandemic and actually improving collective public health. And we need to have a long-term vision, which is that what are we doing now that actually contributes to long-term social justice and long-term social solidarity? And, just to give an example of social solidarity, it's not just about it is about, by the way, the working class and poor folks, showing solidarity amongst each other. But I hate it how we're creating scapegoats out of people who don't deserve to be scapegoats. Like, I'm not a big fan of politicians, as you might appreciate. But it was just absurd that, certain politicians were being criticized for their behavior. For example, and I'm mentioning a CAC person now, a CAC MNA who visited his partner in Peru after not seeing his partner for 1 year, and it was related to immigration. Or, for example, an NDP MP who visited her dying grandmother in Greece for humanitarian reasons. We can't be focusing on these individual stories that make a good headline or an easy way for people to vent about people, and instead ignore the real structural things that we could be doing to improve our pandemic response. And to be clear here, this is also something that can apply just as much to the Trudeau government, because their attitude towards CERB, their attitude towards income supports has been a lot of mixed messaging and has not allowed for there to be an effective collective response. They've just as much been punching down as the Legault government, in my opinion. I appreciate that the League and the Civil Liberties Association of Canada have denounced the curfew, but we also need to talk, and this is not for them to do, this is for other players in society to do. We need to talk about how can we effectively defeat this. Unfortunately, so much of the space that's perceived as being anti-Legault or anti-health measures is by the far right or conspiracy theorists or anti-vaxxers. And people on the progressive left that are pro-science, that believe in science and making decisions based on reason and facts, we don't want to associate with that. But I think now is the time that we kind of can occupy that space and really assert that, we can take health measures seriously. And not only that, but believe in stricter health measures. Like, I believe in the lockdown. I think that's important right now during the second wave. We need to restrain our activities, absolutely. But at the same time, that should not be based on policing, snitching, or curfews.
So do you have any ideas of how people can oppose this?
My ideas aren't original in any way. There's been a lot of debate. There are huge strategic and tactical challenges. A strategic challenge, of course, is how to defy the curfew without having, thousands of people who have $1,000 tickets, and then if you get a second ticket, it'll be upwards of $6,000. So how do you defy the curfew in an effective way and in a safe way? That means being masked and distanced. Another strategic issue is how do we do so in a way that doesn't perpetuate the ideas that the far right and conspiracy theorists have been putting out, that this is a false pandemic or it's something related to Soros or Gates or QAnon or all kinds of nonsense. So those are the challenges. I do think some simple steps we can take right now is to put pressure on societal actors beyond the Ligue des Droits de Liberté and the CCLA to denounce the curfew. That's important, through unions, through community associations, through whatever. I also feel like, you know, we still have, under the current guidelines, we still have the ability to protest before curfew. So anytime between 5 a.m. and 8 p.m., which is a lot of time, we can protest as long as we're masked and distanced. So it'd be good to have a first anti-curfew protest. I think that's inevitable, an anti-curfew protest that's also saying that we support pandemic mitigation measures and that we criticize the fact that certain measures have not been taking place, like providing the funding for improving ventilation in schools or improving pay or giving status to people who've been working during the pandemic or anybody who's living in Montreal or in Quebec right now during the pandemic. So if we had that kind of demonstration, that could be a good first step and provide an opportunity for people to network together and see other ways to defy the curfew. So those are some things that come to mind in terms of protest, defiance, and organizing against the curfew, but organizing against the curfew, not in isolation. You know, a point I want to make is a lot of the time people have opposed the curfew or other health measures based on their rights and based on inconvenience. I don't really have a lot of patience for the inconvenience argument. You know, I've mentioned quite a few times in this discussion, migrant folks. You know, migrant folks are externally resilient, and actually a lot of these measures don't bother them. The curfew might, but others don't, because they come from parts of the world. We come from parts of the world where we've seen, you know, lack of food, where we've seen violence, where we've seen war, a lot of these things perpetuated by the policies of Western governments. So there's a lot of resilience. So the inconvenience thing, I have a very little patience for, mostly because it's okay to be inconvenienced if you're actually helping society be healthier and stronger and better. So I have no problem being inconvenienced, for example, by not being able to see movies or hang out with large groups of friends because I'm helping hospitals not be overrun, and I'm helping long-term health facilities have the time and ability to provide quality of life and a longer life for people, for our elders. So I want to mention that about inconvenience and about rights. Rights don't exist in an abstraction, right? And I feel that any talk about our rights, such as our right to be out after 8 p.m. or our right to circulate, our right to protest, has to be linked to social justice. That's key. So the great error, putting aside people who are far right or conspiracy theorists, because there are people, to be fair, there are people who've opposed pandemic health measures who, you know, who might be acting in good faith or maybe a bit misguided. I feel it's important to put out the idea that, look, your opposition to being inconvenienced or feeling like your rights have been violated has to be linked inherently to what are we doing to create justice and dignity in society at large. And obviously, those are some of the things that I've addressed, and a lot of other people, particularly frontline people working with homeless folks, working with non-status folks, you know very well.
Well, I think that's all the time we have for the interview, Jaggi, but always great to speak to you, and thank you for your insights.
Thanks, Ryan, and hang in there, stay safe, and maybe we'll see each other on the streets during a protest.
For sure.
And that was my interview with Jaggi Singh about the Quebec curfew. Jaggi Singh is a Canadian anti-globalization and social justice activist. He is also an anarchist and has worked with groups such as Solidarity Across Borders and the No One is Illegal Collective. You are listening to Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. Today we are taking a critical look at the Quebec curfew, which has been in place since January 9th. And one of the people that we did interview for this show was Alexandra Pierre, who is the president of the Ligue des Droits et Libertés here in Quebec. And they are an organization that work on human rights in the Quebec context. And they seem to be one of the obvious groups to seek out for their opinion about this curfew in Quebec. So here is my interview now with Alexandra Pierre.
This is Ryan Young for CKUT 90.3 FM, and I'm here with Alexandra Pierre, who is the president of La Ligue des Droits et Libertés. And today we're going to talk about their response to the curfew that has been instituted by Quebec, which starts actually on Saturday, the 9th of January. So we're doing this interview on Friday, so it's actually starting tomorrow night. So what is your organization's issue with this curfew?
Basically, we're a bit puzzled about this announcement of a curfew, because for us, it seems that the curfew and a lot of the measures that have been taken by the government focus a lot on individual responsibilities instead of focusing on like collective solutions, which are mainly government responsibilities. So what we mean by that is that we have this curfew now because it has been, for example, months since we know that one of the more important cause of transmission is aerosol. And a lot of people, scientists, have been asking for improvement in, for example, indoor ventilation. Basically, we need to improve that in school and healthcare facilities. We know also that our testing and tracking capacity is not optimal. We know for sure that a lot of healthcare workers continue to change every day from one facility to another one. So all this kind of measure should be taken or should have been taken before to even think about a curfew. So that's why we're a little puzzled by this announcement. We think that there's a lot of things we could and we should do differently before imposing such a restriction on our right and freedom.
And can you address maybe a little bit why a curfew is a restriction on people's rights?
Well, it's a restriction on our right to circulate, basically. So we know for La Ligue des Droits et Libertés and people working on human rights, we know that rights and freedoms can be restricted. But when it's restricted, it has to be proportional and targeting something very precise. So for us, it seems that there's a lot of things to do before thinking about this kind of restriction. And one other thing that we want to underline is the fact that everyone has to do their part in this situation, because it's a very serious one. But the government ultimately has the capacity to put together some collective solution, and we should be focusing on those collective solutions instead of solely focusing on individual responsibilities. Like, for instance, when we think that, for instance, the government made a very good decision when he decided, for example, to train more people for the public health sector when there was the beginning of the crisis was going on. So we know that, we can imagine that the government can take this kind of initiative, collective one, to make sure that the transmission and the propagation of the COVID stops or at least diminish. But now what we're seeing is that he's putting a lot on the shoulders of individual, and a lot of Quebecers are willing to make some sacrifices. We're already doing that. To do that, we also have to make sure that the government also take his own responsibilities.
And do you find that when you have something like a curfew, you're basically giving police the opportunity to be more aggressive in, questioning people? Often it's said that people who are poor or who may be visible minorities will bear the brunt more of the policing when it comes to a curfew.
Well, there's a great chance that this happened, yes. Yesterday, Minister Guilbeault was saying that she's counting on the policemen to have good judgment. We hope We hope that she will be heard. We hope that if she's not heard, she will also take her own responsibility. But what we know is that since the beginning of 2021, well, social and racial profiling still exists. This curfew, we're also concerned about the effect of the curfew, the fact that there's a lot of police discretion involved, the fact also that the fines are very high. So counting only on the judgment of the police seems to be quite short. So we hope this will be heard, but we're preoccupied by this situation. We can think, for example, about the homeless people. We know that there's have been years since a community organization are saying that there's not enough place in the shelters, that every night, especially during winter, people are rejected from the shelters because there's no place. So with this situation and the pandemic, for sure there will be a lot of people on the street living there because they don't have any other choice. So what will happen to them? What will be their interaction with the police? And how can we come together with collective solution instead of saying, they'll find a place to go inside and that's it. So we're really preoccupied by this specific situation and by the fact that, there's still social and racial profiling and a lot of urban centers in Quebec.
So how do you try to pressure the government or make your case made? You know, how do you try to change things?
Mm-hmm.
What is the strategy?
Well, the strategy is to encourage people to ask questions, including, but not only, of course, but including in the parliament. So to make sure that the opposition make its job or to help the opposition making its job. This is one part, but also we're also into informing and being critical and giving some arguments to citizen groups that are around defending the rights of Quebecers, especially people who are marginalized. So yeah, the basic work of a community organization.
Okay, well, thank you so much for talking to us today and, you know, explaining the work that you do.
Thank you very much.
And that was my interview with Alexandra Pierre, who is the president of La Ligue des Droits et Libertés, which is an organization that works on behalf of human rights here in Quebec. You can find out more by going to the Ligue des Droits et Libertés website, which is LigueDesDroits.ca or LigueDesDroits.ca. You are listening to Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Ryan Young, and today we are taking a critical look at the Quebec curfew, which was put into place starting on January 9th, only, I guess, maybe 3 nights ago. And we also spoke to the Canadian Civil Liberties Association. And the Canadian Civil Liberties Association is a Canadian human rights organization, so nationwide, committed to defending the rights, dignity, safety, and freedoms of all people in Canada. They are an independent, national, non-governmental organization. Michael Bryant is their executive director, but we spoke to Cara Zwiebel, who is the director of the Fundamental Freedoms Program. So here is my interview with Cara now.
This is Ryan Young with Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM, and we're here with Cara Zwiebel, who is the director of the Fundamental Freedoms Program at the Canadian Civil Liberties Association. She's also a lawyer and has a political science degree from McGill University and 2 law degrees, one from Osgoode Hall Law School and New York University. So thanks so much for joining us on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
So just, I guess, as an initial reaction, your organization, perhaps you personally as a lawyer, what was your reaction when you heard that Quebec was going to institute a curfew?
Well, I mean, mean, I think at this point, there's not a lot that's surprising at this point. I think we know that and understand that governments are, you know, looking at all different options and trying all sorts of different measures to try and, you know, get things under control. This is an unusual measure to take, and it's not the kind of thing that we're used to seeing in Canada. We don't, you know, we don't typically have curfews in place, and so it's, I mean, it is concerning, but it's, I think, also just not surprising given how we've, you know, we've had so many measures over these last months that are restrictive of our liberties in an attempt to deal with the public health crisis.
And do you think that, for example, Quebec is being overzealous in applying a curfew? I mean, I think in Ontario, there are more, you live in Ontario, there are more cases in Ontario. And, you know, the government there has chosen, for example, to keep schools closed for longer and not have a curfew so far. We here in Quebec find it strange that the schools are opening and various sectors where there is community transmission of the virus are remaining open, like construction and manufacturing, but yet we have a curfew in place.
Yeah. I mean, I think that the difficulty is that what various governments are doing across the country is, you know, is really about setting priorities and trying to balance the concern and the goal around trying to get the COVID numbers down with, you know, the other considerations that have to do with not completely crippling the economy, with, you know, trying to ensure that people's mental well-being is maintained. And people really do have very different views on all of this, right? I think reasonable people have different views about, you know, what are reasonable measures and what's appropriate. And so, you know, in many cases, it's hard to understand why, you know, why is this open when this is closed? You know, I do certainly think a curfew is a serious restriction of liberty and is something that should really be considered as a last resort. You know, but I also think that it's very important for schools to stay open. It's very important for our kids to have access to education. So there are all of these different competing priorities. And unfortunately, we don't really, you know, this is all happening in real time. We don't have a controlled experiment where we can see, you know, which measures on their own are effective. And my sense is that in Quebec, what the government is trying to communicate is that where transmission is happening because people are getting together socially, they really want to try and address that issue. And I think that's what the curfew is aimed at. I'm not sure that it's going to be effective. I'm not sure it's a wise policy. And I do have a number of concerns about, you know, the implementation, really. I think that whether a curfew is going to be effective in curbing transmission, I certainly have questions about whether it will be. I think what the government is really trying to do with the curfew is send a message about the seriousness of the situation. But I'm not sure that message is going to get through. And for some of the reasons that you've already mentioned, you know, because other things are open, because other, you know, other sort of sectors of society and segments of the economy are still operating. I think people do have reasonable questions about, well, you know, if it's so serious, then why are we doing this and why aren't we doing that? And I think that's been a real problem in a lot of provinces, but probably particularly in Quebec, that the government has not had really clear messaging or a really clear and consistent approach throughout the pandemic. The rules change, you know, frequently, and it can be hard to understand, you know, why on one day this rule is in place and the next day something else is in place. I think that's confusing for people.
And just from a theoretical point of view, you know, from our charter rights, you know, when you look at a curfew, what is the issue with a curfew, just from a theoretical point of view, in terms of how it infringes on our rights that are guaranteed in the charter?
So, I mean, you know, in general, it infringes on a basic liberty right, the right to sort of go about our business and do what we we want to and need to do without restrictions or without the interference of the government. And I think more significantly, even in this case, the existence of a curfew opens up the possibility and gives police the opportunity and the, in some cases, the obligation to, you know, stop people at a certain time of day. The police will potentially have the right to just stop people and ask them why they're out of their home. And when you hand that kind of discretion over to police and allow them to, you know, to interrogate people about where they're going and what they're doing, a lot of problems can arise. And there are people that are going to be much more directly and severely affected by that reality. There are, you know, we know that there are segments of society that are much more likely to be stopped and questioned by police than others. And there are also going to be people who frankly are not in circumstances where they can comply with a curfew. So if you are homeless, I'm not sure what the curfew is supposed to mean for you. And, you know, one would hope that that's not where police would concentrate their enforcement efforts. But we know from the first wave of the pandemic, like, you know, homeless people were given tickets for being in parks. And there were a lot of heavy-handed approaches to the public health measures and to ticketing, particularly in Quebec, more so than in other parts of the country. As we've been saying, you know, throughout the pandemic, the role of police in terms of enforcing public health measures should first and foremost be one of education and really enforcement and charges and ticketing as a last resort. You know, to take the example of a person who is homeless and has no choice but to not abide by curfew, obviously a $1,000 fine, a $6,000 fine, you know, a $100 fine, frankly, would likely be too much for them and really serves no purpose. I mean, this is not someone who is trying to violate the law. It's someone who has no choice. And just like we did see at the beginning in the early stages of the first wave, you know, Quebec was very aggressive with ticketing. I don't think that it had the intended effect. It didn't assist in flattening the curve. It either resulted in people who were unaware of the rules or were not in a position to follow them being punished. And then for those, you know, the small minority of people who don't care about the rules and who are willfully violating them, most likely the fine just doesn't make a difference to them. And, you know, they'll either choose to pay it or they won't, and they'll deal with the consequences. But I don't know that it's having the deterrent effect that is desired.
And is there any other red flags that have come up for your organization when it comes to how Canadian governments have dealt with the pandemic?
I mean, there's a lot certainly that have come up. I think in the earliest stages of the pandemic, we were, you know, a bit more prepared to give the government some leeway because there were a lot of unknowns. And at this stage, I think we should be a bit more rigorous in terms of asking our governments why they're taking the measures that they are. One of the big issues that we struggled with is that the governments in many places are sort of legislating from the podium, or legislating through the press. So they're announcing, you know, new restrictions, but the actual law that lays out those restrictions, so the official, you know, regulation or order, is not released or not publicly accessible for some time after that. And in some cases, you know, even after the rules kind of come into effect. And as an organization that does legal advocacy, we want to see what the law says. We think it's important that there be a basis in law for these restrictions. We're a society governed by the rule of law, and it's not appropriate for the government to just try and legislate by press release. I mean, the curfew in Quebec is one example. It was announced a few days ago. It's supposed to come into effect, you know, the evening of Saturday the 9th. And, you know, at this stage, we still haven't seen the regulation, the actual regulation that lays out the curfew and that lays out the exceptions. which is what police officers who are charged with enforcing it should be guided by, and which is also what, frankly, individuals, you know, who are going about their business and trying to decide what is allowed and what is not, it's the law itself that guides them. And we've seen that in a number of cases in a number of jurisdictions across Canada, that, you know, these announcements are made, but then the actual rules, the legal rules that are in place are not accessible for some time. I mean, it's a different example, but, you know, the federal government made an announcement about travelers entering the country, saying that travelers would need a negative COVID test within 72 hours of boarding a plane headed for Canada. They made that announcement. They said that rule would come into effect on January 7th. The announcement was made on December 31st. And on, you know, January 6th, we still haven't seen a regulation published that laid out that the legal basis for that rule and how that rule was going to be applied. And the airline industry, you know, was quite rightly asking, what are our obligations? How do we know, you know, which jurisdictions have testing that we're allowed to accept? How do we know which jurisdictions we're allowed to say, you know, a test isn't available, so someone has an exception and can come in without a test? You know, I think governments are scrambling to deal with these things, but we need to have the basis in law accessible to people so that they know what the rules are, because just hearing them in a press conference is not, that's not how a society governed by law works.
And is that something that your organization does, is actually follow up and read the regulations and the laws and analyze them?
Yeah, I mean, we've been, you know, where we've had these issues that governments are not publishing them, early enough, we've been urging them to do that and writing and following up. And, you know, with the travel issue, we've said really that new requirement should be delayed until the regulation was published and there was sufficient time for people to, particularly for the industry charged with enforcing it, to get their protocols in place and figure out how they're going to do that. But absolutely, we need to see what the law says. And, you know, when we start, you know, unfortunately, I think it's inevitable that we will likely see stories coming out in Quebec over the next couple of days of people who are inappropriately stopped and ticketed by police under the curfew. And the only way to assess what's appropriate and what's not is to look at what the legal, you know, regulation says, see how that compares to what's happening on the ground. And in some cases, to go to court and ask the court to review the law or regulation and assess whether it's appropriate or whether it's unreasonably restricted people's liberties.
Absolutely. And if Canadians wanted to support the work of the Canadian Civil Liberties Association, well, what could they do?
Well, they should visit our website, ccla.org. And we are a nonprofit organization, a charitable organization that survives based on the donations of Canadians. So we would welcome donations to CCLA. And we do not, as an organization, we don't take government funding because we are, you know, often a watchdog and critical of government. So we rely on individual donations and grants to do our work. And certainly we have, you know, we're on social media. People should follow us on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and visit our site and make a donation.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Cara. That was great to have your perspective.
Thank you.
And that was Cara Faith Zwiebel from the Canadian Civil Liberties Association. She is the director of their Fundamental Freedoms Program. And we were discussing the Quebec curfew, which has been in place since January 9th. You are listening to Equilibrium on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Ryan Young. I hope you have enjoyed this critical look at the Quebec curfew, that you got something out of it. And so we leave you with that, and we wish you well and stay safe. And we encourage people to contact us to tell us what they'd like to hear or any responses to anything we've ever had on the show before. You can always email us at equilibrium@ckut.ca. You can also
Follow us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/EquilibriumCKUTMontreal. So you can also follow me on Twitter at Ryan V. Young, and you can follow me on Instagram at Ryan Young Naturalist. So thanks for listening. We're going to leave you with a cover version of Rockin' in the Free World. Of course, that's the famous song by Neil Young, but I found a great version by Susie Quattro. So here is Susie Quattro doing Rockin' in the Free World.